Thanks for downloading an episode of the Yarra Elders Precious Memories Project. This project was produced in the studios of 3CR Community Radio in Melbourne, Australia, with financial support from the City of Yarra. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, and we need your financial support to keep going. Go to 3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander listeners are warned that this podcast may contain names, voices and images of deceased persons. Now stay tuned for your 3CR podcast.
This lonely heart keeps reminding me of you. How I miss you, heaven knows. This hurt inside keep telling me it's over. But I still love you, Currie Rose.
I'm Elma Thorpe. I'm an elder of the Bunyipmara and I belong to the Currie Rose clan.
And as the golden moon shines brightly up above.
I was born in Fitzroy in 1935. I was a part of the Depression, the days, the bad days, and 45 the war ended and it became worse. I went to George Street State School, Fitzroy, and my years there were 6 years of schooling, only to grade six. After grade six, I worked in a factory from the age of 12 years of age. I became a shoe machinist and stayed there until I was 18. You were the bottom of the ladder, and even if it was the poor whites, it was a different scene that we were down the bottom. We found friends amongst the non-Aboriginal people of Fitzroy, but there was a criminal element that, being blackfellas and Christians, as we were in that time, we weren't allowed to associate. Not that that changed things, because there were people with different views and how you survived those days. But the thing is that we were lucky that we had other Aboriginal people that were in Melbourne. We had our own aunties and uncles that were around in those days. So we had a community. I don't think we would have survived without that community. And I could probably name that was the Kings, the Austens, the Lovetts, the Youngs, the Greens. So we formed our own community. We had our own social life. It was a social life. So we were pretty happy in that way. We had someone. The thing was that everybody was poor. Most people were sick. And you lived in poverty. It was very hard. My mum was a proud woman. Most black women were very strong, proud women. And the women had to hold the stage, and they did pretty well. People like Arnie Marge Tucker and Geraldine Briggs and Eleanor Harding and all the people I can think of as very strong women. They were a support for people in Fitzroy, black or white, very strong, fought the fight very hard. After the war was, when they removed all my cousins then from the mission, again, this was the second thing, because my granny looked after Dawn, Edna, Teddy, and she reared those children, Arnie Doris's, and Carol was one of them. So it became fragmented. But my best friend, and actually my only friend, was Dorothy Lovett. And I really didn't know her before. I knew who she was and that, but your families were pretty private. We weren't allowed to go out. Me and Dot never walked out the doors unless we got permission, because our younger people came just after the war. It was pretty wild. When the young women came to town, it was pretty wild, because all the sailors were around and all the good times, and they never ever come off the missions before. And I lived in Fitzroy in rooms near the St Vincent's Hospital. We had rooms. Arnie Gertie lived there. Edna Scary Austin lived there. Dottie lived there, of course, because Aunt Gertie and I lived with them. So we had rooms in this little double-storied old place. That's all blackfellas had, was rooms. So you had to survive on a rooming situation, or with your aunties or your cousins. Even remember today, walking up Gore Street, someone poked their head out the window and waved to you, how you going, you know.
They say we should part. She took part of my heart. And only God knows how I miss my career.
Thing about the old time memories was pretty important because that kept us together. And we'd go to Auntie Jessie King's place, Jessie Taylor, Josie Johnson's mother. Auntie Jessie Taylor, she was. She played the organ. Go to the Connolly's Young's place. Alice Thomas was there and her mother, they played a piano. And we used to have concerts. I can remember our auntie singing in a cafe in town. No, it was a real fancy type thing, but they put them on for Aboriginal people benefits. Auntie Marge Tucker, she was Princess Laladia. That's a group older. They were my mum's aunties, and they were probably the first women to be sent off the reserve because they went out to be servants to white people and, you know, cleaners and whatever. Auntie May and... Auntie Marge wasn't my auntie, but they became very, very loving people to us anyway, unless they wanted to slap you up because you weren't allowed to speak out of turn. But these were my mother's aunties. There was Annie May. Rosie Donker was Auntie May's daughter. Then we used to go to Mama Nana Moyle's place. That's Auntie Sissy's mother. That was one of the main places in Fitzroy in that day. And I remembered Nana Moyle and old Pop Moyle. I don't know where he come from, old Pop Moyle. But originally, Auntie Sissy, her mother, married an owner. And Nana Moyle was a Nelson from Cummeragunja. We used to play cards then. And I always remember sitting up on her bed and she held the throne. No one played up. You had to pay your way because you had to pay a penny for electricity or put the light on, or the gas light as it was. All strict, no drinking.
In the evening we'd stroll down by the river. And as a golden moon...
I never had a boyfriend till I was 18. Got slapped in the face, the first boy I kissed. And I was 17. So first time I got pregnant, I had to get married because you had to get married or you were nothing, you know. And, you know, you found our young girls, my cousins like Edna and Dawn and that, there was no support system. So we ever went to a backdoor abortionist. A lot died, a lot of young women. Or you went to the Haven, which was in North Fitzroy. It was a Salvation Army place. I remember going there with Edna a few times and a couple other ladies. They'd go into there just 3 months before a baby were born and they'd never see him again. And that was part of that system. Because when you had children without being married... was a terrible thing. The old people thought it was terrible. But these are the things, and young people are not young now, they're 40s and 50s, are coming back now wondering who they belong to. And that was part of that generation, that was stolen generation type thing, you know. But there was another side. People were just taken off the missions, or the reserves, as we called them. So, you know, as soon as a baby was born, they were taken by the welfare. I remember all those boys being taken away from Vicky and old Bobby Lovett. All his boys were taken. You know, there was Brian and Greg, Bobby and the girls, and they were in homes all their life. You've got no idea how many people were in homes, really. We weren't considered good enough to look after our children. If you lived on a riverbank, you were in a bad state. Best place in the world was the riverbank, you know. Me and Dot, we were both shoe machinists. You know, we had to work. Our mothers didn't say, yeah, you come home, you've got to go out and work, you've got to make sure you've got a roof over your head or you've got to earn your own money. It was just so no, so normal for us in them days. Dot was a fussy old girl, didn't muck around with anybody. I was softer. You weren't allowed to play up, I tell you. Dottie was brought up the same. But, you know, when I think back those days, and me and Dottie were allowed to go and step in, but then get home. Not supposed to be here, you know. They were strict on me and Dot. We weren't allowed to play up, and they had a pretty strong discipline. But when we walked home, we'd see a black fella standing in the corner. Could have been Jono Lovett, Mickey Lovett. Yeah, get on, girls. What are you doing out? So you'd be watched all the way home from going out somewhere. It's the safest place in the world to walk, even if it was the day of the criminals. And they pretty held Fitzroy pretty much in the 40s after the war and all that type of thing. Good people they were too. You know, there was good and bad amongst everybody. But we were always the bottom of the ladder. There was the Wogs in those days. I remember them very well. Or there was the Abbos. But you were never classed in their class. My father was a non-Aboriginal person. He was pretty easygoing but strict too. Yeah, but he died in the flats at Collingwood of alcoholism. You went through those times, and pretty sad time, and I'm going to talk up for men now. Pretty sad time for our men of the day, of the 40s. They became the street people, the lame people. I'm not going to say the parkies, that came later. And they lived in empties or they lived in the lane. If they can get a feed, they sneaked in on their wife so they can get a feed, you know, because it was divided. The men weren't allowed to go near the women because they got a flat or something. Just a bit later on in the 50s, they got a flat, and so they were getting a substance, and, you know, they got a home, but the men were left out in the land. And actually, one of our first things in the old Fitzroy Health Service, the first one, which was actually one of their little stoops they had. They used to sleep in the old health service, and we got them all to come in, and they cleaned it all up, and we painted walls, and all of those sort of things. And Sani, Sissy and Mum, they were very active, those old women, and got clothes, let them have showers. So they became part of a family thing. But it wasn't for a medical service, it was a health service or home away from home. We had no medical services. Blackfellas did not go to doctors. They did not go to hospitals. You had to be really sick to go to the hospital, and then when you went to hospital, you died. And this was a fear amongst Aboriginal people. If you got to that stage, that was it. So it wasn't the things like they have today. If you got something wrong with you, you get treated. You never got treated. I can't really remember anybody being treated for a sickness. Probably focused on women and children because we lost the men. And I mean, I can say in the 50s and 60s, we lost most of the young men of my age or younger.
There we'd watch the rippling water as the river softly flowed.
When we set up the health service, it was after the disaster in Lake Tyers of the scabies epidemic. It wasn't set up as a medical centre, it was set up as a health service for the very reasons that you can't look at one thing in a person and try to fix it. It was the whole of the person, and that was how we wanted to focus on. It was the whole of the person, whether it was a sore leg or a sick head, and also it was post-traumatic stress in the mental health area. It came out in different ways, whether you became an alcoholic or whether you, you know, it was just part of the thing, the system. It was Aboriginal health of the whole of the person. And I didn't become interested in health. It was people. It was my thing, was the people of Fitzroy and how we integrated with one another and the feelings that we had. And so the whole idea of the Aboriginal Health Service was a meeting place that you would come and discuss how you felt if you wanted to. It was no forced thing of seeing a doctor because people were weary of seeing a doctor. So you didn't care about health. It was, you know, if you made it the next day, you made it the next day. That's how you survived. We wanted to set up a service that would let us introduce people into the system if they wanted to. And it was very unique how we tried to do that, because it was something that couldn't be forced onto people. And so we'd have people who would come to us to talk and yarn and whatever, weeks and weeks or months before they even attempted to see a doctor. So it was called a home away from home. So it wasn't a matter of going to the doctor, you were going to have a talk. People would say, oh yeah, I've got a headache. So they'd go to the doctor, finally, but they had more wrong than headache. We had a rival's doctor that worked with us for free, Dr. Janet Bacon, who was part of Children's Hospital, also part of the Aboriginal Women's Group that started all of this in the beginning. After 12 months of being involved with us, she said that the record of Aboriginal health, of what she's seen, was long-lasting diseases. They were there and they would be staying there. There was no way that you could fix up some of the diseases like your heart problems, your diabetes or whatever. And they were long-time diseases. We set up our situation that everybody was a health worker. Yeah, and we placed it in a way that we seen Aboriginal people could only deal with Aboriginal people to a certain degree, unless you needed a technician who were doctors or dentists or whatever. And they wouldn't relate. We wouldn't relate to the system. It's very hard to relate to the system. And so that opened the door. If you're a black fella, if you've seen a black face, you could sort of walk in or whatever. We tried to work out a system that could make it friendlier for people to utilise, because you face the racist, you know, there was so much racism and, you know, you weren't nothing. As Goran Wall said the other day, I'm so used to it, doesn't matter, you know. And so therefore you have a system that, oh, I'll get by, I'm not worried. Why worry? How we looked at it was that people could go and feel good about being an Aboriginal person in an Aboriginal place. So therefore they could say, yeah, I think I will see a doctor, you know, I've got pain somewhere or whatever. Never until we had that service did that happen. We were pretty intense on community and working with your own. And it wasn't being apartheid or thinking, you know, it wouldn't have worked, and it still don't work today. I've done my work. It's nearly 35 years I was involved, and it was voluntary. I never ever was paid, only once as an administrator in the early 80s. And most of our staff gave their time. The people of Fitzroy were wonderful. They wanted to be there. And so if you were a driver, you were a health worker. If you sat behind a desk, you were a health worker. So we based it on that line. My mother worked with us for years, her and Auntie Sissy. They were our cleaners, but they were the head people of the place. It was a different way of looking at things, you know. We never had what you have to do today, and I don't think I could work in the system of the corporate bodies and things like today. I'm probably not a person who follows the rules, and it's been very hard for me to understand what has happened in the past 10 years or 15 years. Aboriginal health workers were the most important component of being a service within that time. I don't think we thought about the importance of who a person was, and that was all in together. You know, I'll never forget those people, like Graham Austin, Wilkie Austin, Jan Chessel. It's so diverse. It was very important that people were doing something, and I think people got more pleasure out of being part of that than anything else. It's been useful in their way. Having your own service or your own place made a big difference in the days of Fitzroy, a big difference. Even Mad Muhammad Ali come and visit us, the famous people that came through, even signed my car. I don't know what Americans think of black people in Australia, and I think they wonder whether there are black people in Australia. And so we had a bit of influence from the black mob in America. We were never militant, but we did have visits from Brown. We had people who were mayest. Bruce McGuinness was one mob. Gary Foley was another. Dennis Walker. And he was the most intelligent man I've ever met to form something. He was so intelligent. Bruce Foley, I travelled around Foley and loved them. I loved them. I travelled Australia, which is the world to me, with those men. Especially in the out in Alice Springs way, trying to determine the health workers of the state health at the time, Northern Territory Health, was pretty hard to break the barrier of health workers, because Northern Territory Health would not allow health workers. Now they utilise them all the time, black health workers. So we had to break a sort of a power within that Northern Territory Health to allow Aboriginal health workers to be recognised. Because when you had a sister in charge, nothing worked, white sister. It was pretty bad. Aboriginal health workers were the most important component of being a help, of being a service within that time. I can't say that is today, because of the different laws of you have to have a different education to become a health worker in this time. I hadn't been in health for many, many years, and I don't think I could work in the system of a corporate bodies and things like today. I'm probably not a person who follows the rules. But I feel like my interest never goes, but I think the times are different, so the different ways of life is different altogether. When you get old, you're not going to be able to change things back to the old ways, which I would, but they can't go back. So therefore you hope that the future will be brighter. In the evening we stroll down by the river. As the golden moon shines brightly up above, there we'd watch the rippling water as the river softly flowed. I'd whisper words of love to Curry Rose. Just remember, I still love you, Curry Rose.
You've been listening to an episode of the Yarra Elders Precious Memories Project, produced in the studios of 3CR Community Radio in Melbourne, Australia. For more information and to listen to other episodes in this series, go to 3cr.org.au/YarraElders.